Thanks very much for giving me the opportunity to talk. So the subject of my talk today is quantum chaos, quantum Lyapunov exponents. And it's, you know, this subject in general, quantum chaos, has experienced kind of renaissance recently, in part because of connections to very interdisciplinary research, which includes condensed matter, string theory, quantum information. And I hope I will convey excitement about this research in my talk. So, and let me also start by mentioning, kind of to emphasize this point, let me start by mentioning Aspen program we are organizing this next March. And just, you know, if you're interested in the subject, I would like to encourage you to, you know, consider attending this event. So, and just to emphasize kind of the interdisciplinary nature of this research, apart from myself, the other organizers are Monica Schleyer-Smith, who is a more experimentalist, Brian Swingle, who I guess is pretty well known around here. But I don't know what his field is, but he told me it's quantum geometry, but I couldn't do that, actually. So I would say it's condensed matter, quantum information, and Douglas Stanford, who is string theories. Anyway, so this is the outline of my talk. So I will start with a rather kind of gentle introduction into quantum chaos, which is actually not that easy to even define what that means. But one of the definitions we will consider has to do with so-called out-of-time ordered correlator, which is an attempt to generalize the notion of Lyapunov exponent to quantum mechanics. We'll discuss it quite a bit. And then we'll consider this object, this out-of-time correlator, in a few systems. Well, very simple systems first. Single particle systems and then many body systems. But, you know, the systems, in particular Billiards and so-called standard map, will teach us some very important lessons about quantum Lyapunov exponents and the structure of this correlator that kind of carry over to many body physics. And hopefully I will have some time to talk about our recent work on so-called many body quantum chaos, which addressed a certain theorem that Maldacena, Schechter, and Stanford have proven under certain conditions, which postulates a bound on the quantum Lyapunov exponent in a certain class of models. And I'll show you that actually in some models of interest to condensed matter, these bounds can be violated. Anyways, that's kind of a rough plan. So let me start with first defining what quantum chaos actually means. So there are several ways to do so. The probably most straightforward way, the kind of dumb way to do that, is just to take a, well, I don't know, take a classical system, which is chaotic, in this case is this stadium or Bunimovich billiard, and quantize it and declare the system as quantum chaotic and stare at the wave function. So it's not extremely profound definition, but that's one possibility. So another a bit more sophisticated approach has to do with studying level statistics of quantum system. And the hallmark of quantum chaos would be Wigner-Dyson level statistics of the Hamiltonian, which reflects so this is Wigner-Dyson, and this is basically a histogram of level spacings. And well, at low level spacing, you see this level repulsion, which is kind of hallmark of quantum chaos. And this definition is more general in the sense that, you know, not every quantum system necessarily has a standard, you know, a natural classical counterpart. But importantly, there is a conjecture, which I'll refer to as a BGS conjecture, Bahiga's Giannani Schmidt conjecture, which postulates or, you know, predicts or conjectures that if indeed you have a classically chaotic system under some relatively mild conditions, and you quantize it, you will actually see Wigner-Dyson statistics. So that's one kind of connection between the two. So the classical definition of chaos usually can be understood based on the butterfly effect, namely that if you make a very small change to initial conditions, let's say where, you know, put your particles here. Actually, I had this animation. I guess it's already well thermalized. But initially, all these particles were in the same spot, almost at the same spot. And then they start bouncing off of the walls of the billiard, and eventually you see this thing, which, you know, has no recollection of the original state. So, and the measure of this You know, butterfly effect is a Lyapunov exponent, which is how fast the classical trajectories actually diverge. Well, there's a problem with defining a Lyapunov exponent in quantum mechanics, because there are no trajectories in quantum mechanics. But there was a recent, well, actually not so recent, there was a kind of approach that was introduced first by Larkin of Chinnikov. Larkin was actually my advisor. It was done a long time ago, almost 50 years ago. And then it was recently kind of revived by Stanford, Kitaev, Maldacena, and others. So basically, it's a third definition, if you want, of quantum chaos, and which has to do with defining quantum Lyapunov exponent. Let me do that. So let me go back to the actual original definition by Larkin and Ovchinnikov. So they were considering, if you read their paper, which actually many people working on this in this field don't probably read the paper, so because it was pretty obscure paper on some aspects of quasi-classical methods in the theory of superconductivity. And essentially, they just considered disordered metal, basically. Nothing particularly sophisticated. So, and an object that popped up in their calculation as an intermediate step was this step of a correlator. So here, x of t is just simply the Heisenberg operator of a coordinate. P of zero is the momentum operator at time zero. And if you look at this quantity, so since, you know, as we all know, P is sort of d over dx, so the kind of meaning of this correlator is that it shows you the sensitivity of where your particle will be at time t with respect of where it is at time zero. So this is literally the sensitivity to initial condition. But you can formulate, well, you can define this object for quantum mechanics, and whether it has classical limit or not, it's relevant. You can calculate it anyways. So, and it's very appealing in kind of approaching quantum chaotic systems because it's as close as it gets to the classical notion of butterfly effect. So, well, if classical trajectories do diverge exponentially, at least in the h-bar to zero limit, or maybe a large n limit, whatever is your quasi-classical limit actually is, so you expect to see, exponential divergence with twice the Lyapunov. So, the third definition then becomes if, you know, we can declare that if the correlator grows exponentially for some states, we will call the system quantum chaotic and the corresponding exponent and the quantum Lyapunov exponent. Well, a good question, actually central question in my opinion, is whether these definitions, the three definitions I gave, are actually consistent. Well, we don't know. I mean, actually we do know in some cases they're not consistent, but in some cases they are. Another thing I want to emphasize is that such correlators such as this, I mean, here I am talking about x of t, p of zero, but they can be defined not necessarily for single particle systems, but also for many body systems, and it doesn't necessarily have to be x of t and p of zero. It can be some other operators that don't commute. And this is exactly what, you know, current main research, you know, is focused on, is to think about these objects in another context. And another important kind of contribution, and which kind of, I guess I said, revived this all these old ideas, was that these guys have proven or conjectured a bound on so-called many-body chaos, which will remain undefined for some time. Namely, that this coefficient or this exponent cannot be larger than something. So these are the guys who contribute to it. And I'm sure you all know them here. So what they actually consider, I'm not an expert on this stuff, but much of this recent interest in this out of time order correlator has to do with actually surprisingly connections to gravity. So apparently there are some models, as I will briefly mention, such as YK model, which has some interesting dual descriptions. And but independently of that, what was actually done in the paper, in this paper, they considered a sort of thermal average of you have some operators B, A, and these are kind of the analogs of X of T and P of zero in my kind of simple example. But they average it with a thermal ensemble of maybe quantum field theory or some other theory. And also importantly, I've been having exchanges with Stanford about that, so they symmetrize this correlator because it's convenient for some mathematical analytical continuations. But so basically that's what they consider. Okay, you may ask why do we care, and that's actually a great question, but that's what they consider. So And what they have proven, actually under very relatively mild assumptions, but important ones, so with theorem, that if you do assume exponential growth of this object, and you assume certain rather reasonable things about the structure of these correlators and analytical properties of those, you can prove a theorem that basically this, I call it lambda tilde, which may or may not have the meaning of actual Lebanov exponent. So this thing, it must be smaller or equal to this very, you know, 2 pi kBT over h bars, just fundamental constants in temperature, which is very interesting. And, you know, what also was interesting for them is that it turned out that this bound saturate, meaning it's actually equal to this bound for certain strongly correlated models with interesting gravity descriptions. So, and one thing I'll mention right here is that, as I will try to convey in my talk, in most cases, this exponential growth of a correlator has to do with the classical descriptions. In the case of Villiard's, this classical description is kind of obvious. You know, it's a motion of wave packets, as I'll show you. In some models, it may not be obvious at all, but there it still exists. So in some sense, search for exponential growth is a search for most classical description. In their case, it happens on the other side in this dual description. That's kind of interesting. But anyway, so that's what was done. And you know, that's part of the motivation. I'm not going to be talking too much about that, but you know, we can discuss it later if I'm kind of interested in this. So what I will do now, though, is that I'll move to very simple models. So I'll try to see, you know, I'll try to explore the structure of this correlator, the meaning of this correlator on this in very simple models. So Billiards first, and as I said, so even though it may seem irrelevant to perhaps to interest, you know, people working quantum field theories and, you know, gravity, it turns out actually it is relevant. You just have to be, you know, careful. So anyway, so first let us take this classical Billiard. It's called Bunimovich Billiard, stadium Billiard. It's classically quotic. If you do quantize it and study level statistics, which we did, you actually find, surprisingly, first, that you see something like Poisson distribution. And we looked at it and we realized, you know, something is wrong. So we, it turns out that we were just stupid, you know, in a sense. So, you know, this stadium Billiard has symmetries. So it has symmetric with respect to reflections, basically, with respect to vertical and horizontal, you know, middle axis. And, you know, each of the, you know, there are four different symmetries of wave function which just don't mix with each other. So they're totally independent. They're like block diagonal matrices. So each of them, actually, if you do things correctly, you get perfect Wigner Dyson. But if you're not smart enough, which we were not, so they don't repel each other, you know, these blocks, because they don't know if each other exists. And one lesson here, right here, is that one has to be careful with symmetry. So if you look at the, you know, any maybe more complicated model, you may not know all the symmetries. And you may decide, oh, it's Poisson, that's as far as, you know, it's not chaotic. Well, it may not necessarily be the case. That's, you know. Lesson number one, you know, and this, by the way, this was not a new thing. So, well, in the end of the day, if you do consider separately this, what I'm talking about, again, just to make it clear, is that you have this Billiard and you have, you know, reflections, and there are kind of four segments you can consider. If you just consider this part of the Billiard, essentially, you will get perfect Wigner Dyson. And this is consistent with BGS conjecture, which has been known for a while. It was just a sanity check we did. So that's the first part. So you do have this correspondence between the classical chaotic system and the actual Wigner Dyson. Now, well, we want to check if this out-of-time correlator you know, is consistent, the growth of it is consistent with, you know, these two definitions. Well, there was a paper by these guys who did, who looked this, literally at these Billiards and put, you know, put in the thermal ensemble and ground state. And what they found is that the thermal out-of-time autocorrelator in the stadium Billiard does not show the exponential growth. So what's plotted here is not my paper, it's from their paper, is this out-of-time order correlator for stadium Billiard, which is classically chaotic, and circle Billiard, which is not even a Billiard. Obviously, it's not chaotic. And they see basically the same thing.
The naive one,
that's right. Yeah, but the point is that this correlator is an operator, but the average depends on what kind of state you choose. Well, if you choose a ground state of a Billiard, it doesn't move anywhere, it doesn't have any, you know, any particular reason to grow, actually. So when we looked at, you know, basically what we realized is that Lyapunov growth can be actually extracted. In fact, you can extract the exact Lyapunov exponent, classical Lyapunov exponent, if you consider a different initial state. Namely, if you consider a highly localized wave packet, minimally localized wave packet in the billiard and let it go. So, and that's what happens. So that's kind of nice animation, my student Efim that produced. So, and what you see here, actually it's kind of, maybe let me run it again. So, so first you have this, basically, you know, think about it as a quasi-classical like object that just initially bounces around and reflects off of the walls, and then it spreads out with time in accordance with laws of quantum mechanics, eventually spreads out completely, it's no longer classical. So this initial moment, motion of this thing bouncing around the billiard is actually basically is realizing the this Lyapunov growth. So while then when it spreads out up to the length scale comparable to the system size, this is called Ehrenfest time, it stops growing. Basically, quantum mechanics washes out classical physics, and that's where you don't see growth anymore. So that's actually lesson number two. So you know here. To get this exponential growth, one needs to be careful about choosing the state. So in this case, it's kind of obvious what classical state, well, what state is the most classical. So anyways, let me show you the actual out-of-time ordered correlator. So here, it's literally this, you know, naive one, Larkin of Chinnikov one, plotted as a function of time and log scale. So there are a few features here. So the first feature is just, you know, this wave packet bouncing off the wall for the first time. It takes time to reach the wall. It's kind of silly thing. But then there is some time region, or some region of time where it has enough time to collect this exponential kind of growth. And that's where you see this exponential growth with some Lyapunov exponent. That is actually equal sort of to modulo numerical accuracy, to the classical Lyapunov. And then it stops, the exponential grows is replaced by something slower, and that's when Ehrenfest time, this is quantum mechanics now kicking in. This is purely classical stuff, essentially. And then there is, you know, Ehrenfest time, it's spread out, and then actually what's happened here, quantum interference starts building up. This is actually where very Wigner-Dyson statistics builds up. Wigner-Dyson statistics, sort of late time behavior, this thing is lower, is early time behavior. So, but all in all, so this, I think, what we can say is that, you know, in this simple billiard, we do have, consistency between the three definitions, but in order to find this exponential growth, well, you have to actually look for what kind of classical state would give it. And in more complicated model, it may not be that so simple to find such a state. Let's say in the SYK model, it also actually maps onto in some single particle, Sajev-Yakitayev model, many-body model, it maps onto certain single particle quantum mechanics, where similar things happen, but the variables there are very unnatural, so you cannot just guess them. Anyways, so one thing that is kind of disconcerting is that this this correlator depends on the state. You have to guess a state, okay? You have to know what state would give you this exponential growth. And another thing we did just recently is that we realized, so why don't we just look at the this operator as an operator without being biased by particular bases. So, and just like we can study statistics of energy levels of just a Hamiltonian operator, let's say in a billiard or whatever other system, we can do so for this operator, which we called Lyapunovian. Okay, at least semantic contribution. You have basically the, this thing, if it grows exponentially, it will give you the Lyapunov exponent, but if I'm not averaging it out, it's actually still an operator. So we're looking at this operator as a function of time. Well, and you can diagonalize this operator just like you diagonalize any other operator, just for instance, putting it in the basis of the eigenstates of your billiard. And look at the level statistics. And you find something actually interesting. So you find perfect Wigner-Dyson, sort of. But with this, so Wigner-Dyson is there are different classes there. So there is unitary class, orthogonal class, symplectic class. But what we find here is that S equals 3. That's how the levels repel each other at low energy, which doesn't have a name really. It's sort of in between. So there is a distribution like that called Wishart distribution. If you have two random matrices and you square, just one random matrix, you square it. And it also will be random matrix, but it's its level statistics will actually be that. So anyway, so you see Wigner-Dyson for relatively long time. So at early times, things are kind of funny. So we can also look at just, you know, it's not really crucial, but we can look at other operators, so let me just not talk about. So that's nice. But, you know, as I told you before, so, you know, this exponential growth is really early time classical behavior. While this guy, the, you know, the Wigner-Dyson distribution is late time quantum interference, very well developed quantum interference. That's where it comes from, actually. So in some sense, that's, you know, this object is nice in that it connects the two time scales. And it is, would be kind of interesting to do connect them. So when we did so, we looked at, I'm going to just outline it briefly. So we looked, you know, of course, the operator, the spectrum of the operator is a basis in the statistics of this, it shouldn't be basis dependent. So, but, you know, if you do numerical simulations, things, you know, you have to, of course, truncate your, you know, your states, and you're kind of a bit biased by the choice of the basis. So here we look basically at, you know, we projected this operator on the subspace of localized minimal uncertainty wave packets, specifically in the biliary. And what we found, just to make the long story short, so here we're looking at the spectral statistics as a function of time. So this operator is a function of time, right? So it, you know, it, t equals zero, this is just the trivial, you know, constant, you know, zero basically. So, and what happens as time goes by is that initially the level statistics is reminiscent to Poisson, so basically totally disconnected, you know, phase-space cells which don't talk to each other. And then they start talking to each other and can kind of understand analytically using, well, quantum mechanics, but I'm not going to talk about it. But to make the long story short, there is a transition or kind of crossover from Poisson type, uncorrelated, you know, spectrum of this operator to Wigner-Dyson at late times. And the crossover happens around the Ehrenfest time. So anyway, so I think it's, okay, I'm actually, I like this result, and in that it allows you to connect very intuitively the early time behavior where you see this Lyapunov growth here, and the late time behavior where you see Wigner-Dyson, and potentially in more complicated models, it may be of value. And as I'll mention later, so let's say if you study, you know, many body physics, it may be difficult to diagonalize the Hamiltonian, find Wigner-Dyson or whatever distribution, but it may be actually pretty straightforward to calculate the correlator. This is just, you know, some correlator. Well, it's not trivial, but you can do it. And if there is a well-defined correspondence between, you know, definitions, you know, the growth of the correlator versus Wigner-Dyson, you may not need actually to diagonalize your Hamiltonian. You will know right away what your, you know, level statistics is. And that may be of value. Now, here I'm just going to, before going to the next, actually, any questions so far? Yep.
At the beginning, you showed some
great
exact eigenstates, which looks very chaotic, of the clear. So can one get information about the Lyapunov experiment just by looking at one eigenstate?
Well,
some.
Yeah, I would say that probably no, actually, because so this Lyapunov exponential, at least in my mind, in most cases, is really getting as classical as you can get. So I mean, maybe for a very highly excited state, you may get some information, but really I want to have some wave packet. I need more than one state. So for instance, let's say if you take, let's say obviously the ground state, you know, it doesn't move anywhere, it's very spread out, it's uniform, there is no information about Lyapunov. Still has information about the system, but not the Lyapunov. So, well, we tried that, and we don't see what we wanted to see. Okay, maybe we weren't smart enough. But I mean, I think you really need to construct, and you really need more than one state to construct a wave packet. So in this particular geometry. But I would say that in most cases, that works exactly the same way. So you need, you know, you have a quantum system, you may or may not know its solution, so, but if you believe it's chaotic in whatever sense, so if for some reason you care about Lyapunov, well, you need to find what classical description means. So, yeah. All right, so, yeah. So let me just mention one result, which, you know, we're still writing up. So, and actually it's the work with Bunimovich. So this billiard that we studied is called Bunimovich billiard. Bunimovich, you know, actually was giving a talk in Mexico some months ago, And there was a guy in the first row, and you know, he was asking questions about the billiard, and I asked, you know, who is this guy? And he said, oh, it's actually Bunimovich. So, and I thought he was like a 19th century mathematician, but it turns out that, you know, he's a student of Sinai, and he's, you know, a lot of fun anyways. And we actually started collaborating on. And so what I'm gonna mention now is, I think it's very interesting. It's actually using this out of time order correlator. I probably should, you know, it's not yet complete, but I'm pretty excited about it. It's very simple. Just kind of a bit of a side thing, but I thought, you know, you might like it. So anyway, so there is an example of the use of this out-of-time order correlator, which allows me to show that there may be a breakdown in the sense between quantum to classical correspondence, in the sense that you may get a classical system which is not chaotic, but quantum system is chaotic and vice versa. So let me explain. So, and it's based actually on the work of Bunimovich, who is a classical guy, so he does classical games. But we kind of extended it to quantum. So consider the following. Consider a billiard, which is this, you know, arbitrary basically shape, black shape, and you have some point particle bouncing around. Now replace, you know, the point particle with an actual physical billiard, you know, ball, you know, that you know, play pool or something. So what is the behavior of this physical particle? So, well, obviously what happens is that the center of this particle cannot approach the boundary closer than its radius. So in order to you know, map mathematical billiard into a physical billiard, you basically just redraw the boundaries of the billiard, putting the constraint and the ball cannot be closer than the radius. So here is an example of that. Here's another example of that. Now, okay, you may say this is stupid, right? So okay, fine. So you replace one billiard with another billiard. But what's important is that there is a whole class of billiards, for instance, polygon billiards, that are proven to have always zero Lyapunov exponent. Polygon means you have sharp edges. But once you do this rounding, once you put a physical billiard, a physical ball kind of in this billiard, you actually round off a bit the corners. So it's no longer a polygon. So you know, you may consider a mathematical billiard, you know, put a finite size particle in let's say in this irrational triangular billiard, and you know, the mathematical billiard corresponding to this is this red shape, which no longer has a sharp edge. And those actually may have finite Lyapunov exponent. So for example, this billiard is chaotic, this billiard is not chaotic. So it's actually ergodic but non-chaotic. There is an interesting distinction, this one. So it means that the trajectories fill up the entire phase space, but there is no zero, the Lyapunov exponent, Kolmogorov, Sinai are zero. Anyway, so okay, why do I care? Well, anyways, I already said that. So I'll just give you the key idea. I'm not going to talk too much about it, just, you know, kind of side thing, but I'm kind of excited about this. The key idea is that once you quantize this thing, and think about wave packet is kind of finite size. You have Heisenberg uncertainty relation. It's closer to a ball than to a point particle. So you may start with the billiard, which is non-chaotic, meaning it has a zero Lyapunov exponent, quantize it, calculate this Lyapunovian out-of-time correlator, and we do find exponential growth, which is, I think, kind of cool. So in the sense that this Lyapunov exponent is h-bar dependent, it's no longer you know, single particle effect, but still it's exponentially growing. So just a side thing. You know, maybe an example of why we care about this out-of-time order correlator, because one thing I've been kind of puzzling about is that, okay, we calculate them a lot, but we don't know really why. Except that, you know, Kitaev told us that we should. So anyway, so let me now address another thing. So kind of changing gears a little bit. So I showed you this plot, which is the out of time order correlator as a function of time. And it does show this exponential growth. And then it kind of stops, or well, you know, things change. So, and what I want to understand is how and why this happens. And I want to emphasize that even though this is a single particle model, the exact same thing happens in other models, such as, for instance, the SYK model, which is IGF-Yakitaev model. So I'm sure you've heard more than, okay, enough here about the SYK model, but let me just remind you, so that in this model, you consider this, you know, fully coupled, let's say, Majorana operators, so it would be spins, and actually the original model, SYK model, was actually spins, not Majoranas. And this model can be solved in the large n limit. And you know, I'm not going to describe the solution, but to make the long story short, so there is this kind of symmetry that emerges for this Green's function. And this symmetry, you know, it's kind of this, some people call Goldstone mode, but basically due to the breaking of this symmetry, there is a theory that you can derive called Schwarzian theory, which essentially encodes in it all low energy degrees of freedom. And you can use this theory to calculate, in particular, out of time order correlators and whatever you care about in this model. And this was done in particular in the work by Kamenev. I should have cited it here, I forgot. It's not my work, actually. So yeah, so this is Kamenev's paper from the work of Kamenev, and something similar was done by Stanford and company. So what I want to emphasize here is that you have this region where you, this is basically F is, you know, some variant of this out of time order correlator, and there is this exponential behavior initially, and then something changes, eventually goes into the power law. And there is this crossovers that, you know, kind of complicated. So one needs, okay, it's kind of of interest to understand what happens both here and here. And in both cases, actually, we're talking about single particle quantum theory. So in this case, it's just, you know, kind of simple Schrödinger equation. And the billiard here is this weird Schwarzian, but it's still actually single particle description of the many body model. So, and we will do so, we will understand, I'm not going to study these models, but the model I'm going to study will teach lessons which are, again, applicable to a wider range of models, including this one. So the model I'm going to study is called Standard Map or Kick-Trotter. So it was done primarily by Fiem and Shriram Ganeshan, who's now a professor over in New York. So he was a postdoc, thus, and Fiem is my student now. Anyway, so let me introduce the model. So again, this is a different model, but this model is very useful in exploring this transition from exponential growth to Legendre. So I'm getting to a new model now. So the model is very simple to write down. So the model is basically a particle in a ring, which is being periodically kicked every, I don't know, 1 second or whatever. So with some kicking strength k. That's the only parameter in the classical regime that you have. So this model is also called Cherikov standard map. It's really standard model of classical chaos. If you open any book on classical chaos, that's chapter number one or chapter number two. So what, you know, this map tells you is that, well, basically it's totally trivial. So this is just, you know, x of t is equal to x of 0 plus vt. You know, mass is 1, so it's just, and here is time. But time is discrete because you kick it every period. And this is basically Newton equation, you know. dp dt is equal to the, you know, force. So, well, anyway, so that's the simple equations you can write. It's a dynamical system, a discrete map. Okay, so why is it interesting? So it's interesting because it's a very simple model that allows you to study a transition to chaos classically. So again, it has just one parameter here, which is called, you know, this kicking strength k. Well, the trivial thing, okay, let's start with k equals 0. Well, then things are definitely trivial. So this is phase space trajectories. So momentum is just conserved, that's it. So these are your trajectories. You know, the particle just keeps moving around the circle. Then if you actually do start to kick it, so these, you know, these straight lines deform into curves, which are, you know, Kolmogorov, Arnold, Moser, Torrey, and still the system is mostly integrable. But then as k increases, you start developing these chaotic regions and eventually go into total, you know, complete chaos, which I can't really draw. But the meaning of this is that if you put initial condition somewhere here, the particle will explore the entire phase space in between these integrable regions. And eventually it will be just, you know, totally chaotic with some islands. I mean, actually, I should say that this model looks really simple, but there are still puzzles about this model. People are, you know, have been working on this full time for like 40 years. They're not, yeah. So I'm not doing that necessarily, but yeah. So anyway, so that's the model, and you know, if you it's another just animation as a function of k. But the point is that if you are in the chaotic region, you can study the Lyapunov exponent. You can actually calculate analytically more or less. And anyways, so it's chaotic. Now, what does it actually mean? So it means that, for example, you know, you have, in some sense, diffusion in momentum space. So if you're walking, you know, randomly in, let's say, in momentum space, well, your momentum goes as square root of t, diffusion. Well, therefore, energy, which is p squared over 2m, grows as t. So, and sure enough, if you calculate the, you know, energy as a function of time, classically, you will see this linear growth. You can call it classical metal. While the integrable curves are classical insulators, things don't grow. Well, okay, so now you can quantize this standard map. which basically amounts to putting hats on top of P and S. That's it, you quantized the model. Well, and this model then becomes a Floquet problem. Floquet means it's a periodic in time Hamiltonian. It's a simple Floquet model, though, because you don't really have to worry about solving the Floquet operator. It's just a product of the two because of the delta function. So anyways, what's interesting, what I want to emphasize here, and it's actually a very generic effect, very interesting effect, which is much more general than this particular model. So if you calculate the energy just like you did in the classical case, but for this quantum Q-trotter, so this is classical diffusion. This is quantum result. Actually, it's our result, but these results, you know, you can find them, you know, in Wikipedia or something. So it's not, or in any book. So this is quantum result. And what happens, you know, initially it kind of follows the classical behavior, and then it saturates. The energy saturates. The energy stops growing. So this phenomenon is called dynamical localization. And it turns out that it's related to Anderson localization in time, basically, as I will explain. So it's purely quantum effect. It's very interesting. So, okay, let's try to understand. And also, I should mention that it's actually been observed routinely, in fact. So there are many, many experiments with quantum gases, with cold atoms, et cetera. And we're actually collaborating with some experimentalists on that. And basically, what it means is they just flash a lattice, you know, have Bragg pulses, you know, that corresponds to this. This potential, but to make a long story short, well, that's actually first experimental data, well, more than 20 years ago now, where they did see this thing. So it's not some, you know, theoretical construct, it's, you know, very well known. And furthermore, it turns out that these types of Qt models exhibit this dynamical localization very generically. It doesn't have to be Qt-trotter, it can be Qt spin or Qt whatever. So it is very generic. And the reason for that is the following. So there is actually a mapping of this model and many other models, which maps this problem onto Anderson insulator, which is very strange, because the model doesn't have any disorder whatsoever. So, but still, you get a mapping. Let me explain that. It's a bit technical, but you know, I'm in the perimeter Institute. It's okay. So anyway, so let's consider this Floquet Qt model. So it can be some kinetic energy. It doesn't have to be actually P squared, but let's say it's P squared. And there's kicking, some potential energy that you kick. Let's say K times cosine X, or whatever you want. Well, this is my Floquet operator. It's just a product of free evolution between the kicks times the kick. That's it. That's my Hamiltonian exponentiated. And what is of interest is to find spectrum of this Hamiltonian, which is Floquet spectrum, or spectrum of quasi-energies. And the energies omega are defined modulo the frequency of the drive of the kick. Anyway, so let me just say a few things. So first of all, I'll put omega here, but there is a very simple statement. I call it theorem, but it doesn't have to be called a theorem. It's just a statement that any unitary operator, U, whatever it is, can be represented as a ratio of two operators, one plus IH, one minus IH, where H is Hermitian. And H is tangent of U. Okay, that's the only piece of information I will need. And what I will do, I will represent each of these guys as so. So this Hermitian operator I'll call W. This Hermitian operator I'll call T. And then I'll do a little bit of rearrangement. So I'll call this wave function, you know, psi tilde, whatever, I forgot what I want to call it. And I multiply it by one minus IW. Anyways, you can do it in 1 minute. That, as a result of this exercise, the equation becomes this. T plus W psi tilde equals to zero. And then T is an operator, which is a tangent of cosine, in this case. And W is a tangent of, you know, P squared over 2m. In the case of Qt-trotter, momentum is actually angular momentum. It's quantized to integers. So therefore, you know, I have essentially one-dimensional lattice, if you will, of angular momenta. And in this basis, this thing means an on-site potential for this lattice. Well, this thing means some non-local, but pretty local, actually, hopping between the sites. And since this p squared over 2m, you know, m squared, m was mass, now m is angular momentum, but basically this m squared term here, tangent of m squared, is totally incommensurate with the lattice. It's kind of random potential. It's not really random, but it's random enough in the sense that this type of a Hamiltonian is actually Anderson localized. Okay. So if it's, and in some sense, this guy is disorder and this thing is hopping. I don't know if it was clear. It took people, I don't know, maybe 15 years to actually figure out this mapping, but it was done in the 80s or so. But what's interesting is that since, well, I have Anderson insulator of Floquet eigenstates in the angular momentum space, and energy is angular momentum squared over 2, well, sure enough, you get localization of energy, therefore, and that's the origin of dynamical localization. So even though the system has no disorder whatsoever, actually, you still get Anderson localization in some weird space, and it manifests itself as a, you know, localization. Exactly. Right, and yeah, and actually, it's kind of interesting. You know, we had a few papers with Raphael and others. You know, there is this activity on many body localization. Well, usual, you know, Anderson localization, right? So basically, you know, kind of dumb way to look at it is just you take Anderson insulator, turn on interactions, and things are still localized, and you say, wow, you know, it's many body localized. So here, in principle, you can do the same thing. You can take, you know, this, you know, single rotor sure is dynamically localized. It basically stops absorbing energy. And then if you couple many rotors, you can prove that in certain cases, it still persists. You have a many body dynamical localization, which actually is important for some things. Because you may want to have systems which you perturb dynamically, and they don't just heat up to infinity. So that's another thing I'm doing, but this is not a part of my talk. Anyways, so now I want to move closer to the subject of my talk, actually, which was chaos. So this system is actually classically chaotic in a slightly different sense, because it's a dynamical system. It's not a billiard. Well, it's a different type of dynamical system. So what we did, we took this model and just calculated, well, I mean, we did a little bit of analytics, but it's not really an analytically friendly model, unfortunately. So we did also some numerical analysis of this out-of-time order correlator. So what's plotted here is the logarithm of this out-of-time order correlator divided by time. So if it grows exponentially, you want to see a flat region. Well, you do see that. And here are different colors represent different kicks, different kicking strengths. Things don't really depend on h-bar, meaning that it's really classical. So what depends on h-bar is how early this exponential growth stops. So if h-bar is really large, then you just don't see it. After the first kick, things are quantum, and you don't see any quantum mechanics. That's another actually lesson here, because you know there are some models like you know spin 1/2 models, for example, where people are looking for this exponential growth, and they're not finding it. And the reason is that the Ehrenfest time is just too small. You know, the quantum mechanics kick in immediately, so you don't have time to develop, you know, this classical exponential growth. But here, if you're, you know, you have to work hard. If you look at rather small h bars, effective h bars, you get this exponential growth. And what I want to emphasize also is that you see a really sharp change from this exponential growth to something else. And that's actually very interesting that I'll mention in a sec. So another thing we looked at is, you know, actually we compared, well, you can easily extract Lyapunov exponent, or actually, let me call it growth rate of this correlator just by, you know, dividing it by 2, you know, so that's it. So and compare it with the Lyapunov exponent in the classical rotor, which is very well known. It was calculated by Cherikov in, you know, 60 whatever. So, but, and we were kind of surprised that things were close. So what's plotted here is, I have to remind myself, so there is the green line is the classical, this dashed line is the classical Lyapunov exponent, numerical analytical, but you know, let's look at the green triangles. And green line and these red circles correspond to the growth rate of the quantum rotor. And I was giving my student very hard time saying, you know, they have to coincide, they just have to be the same. You know, we didn't publish the paper because I said, you know, it's a mistake, look for an error. And then we realized there is no error, they're actually different. So the difference here comes, and you can show it in other cases as well. So here it's kind of a bit suspicious that they're going parallel. But basically you can see that in some sense when you define a classical Lyapunov exponent, you average over classical phase. But what you do average is the Lyapunov exponent itself. When you're doing quantum mechanics, you average over quantum state. So, and you average the correlator. So it's kind of like partition function versus versus free energy. So there is a different order of averagings in quantum mechanics and classical definition, and well, they're different. So, and therefore in systems, at least with mixed phase space, such as these. What it means is that you have chaotic regions and integrable regions coexisting. So you actually, these two exponents, in fact, are different. So we may want to, you know, be careful in defining things here. So anyway, so I guess what we, okay, that's interesting, but maybe not such a big deal. It's sort of simple to understand. But what is sort of an interesting and a big deal, I think, is how does this happen? How do you change from this exponential growth to this, you know, how does this actually stop? And in this model, you can actually figure it out analytically even. And I'm not going to explain all details. I'm going to just give you a flavor. And it's based on this old work by Igor Alainer and Anatoly Larkin, which is the following. So instead of calculating the out-of-time order correlator that we did, you can calculate the energy of this object, quantum rudder, as a function of time. As, you know, as I said, so initially it follows the linear classical diffusion, basically, and then it, you know, something changes. And you can do this using some rather complicated but, you know, straightforward ways of basically writing it something like a path integral, and you have classical terms which have no quantum interferences, then you have terms with first quantum interference, you know, two quantum interferences, et cetera. And so there's a correction, which is actually called weak localization correction. And here it pops up, in, you know, you see the theta function, it's a true singularity. And the reason it appears this way is because it takes time to develop first quantum interference. So for example, if you consider classical, in this model anyway, so if you consider classical motion of this particle, let's say on this lattice, so you have, you know, this singular, this main correction to classical diffusion, which is called weak localization, hinges on the interference of self-crossing trajectories. So there are some loops that you form. And those interfere in a non-destructive way and give you actually non-zero corrections. But it takes time to develop the first loop. It doesn't happen immediately, classically. It just takes some time, you know, for instance, 10 kicks or whatever. So, and this singularity is exactly that. So that classical physics in this model is actually exact for some time, almost. So, and then this term kicks in, and you see this correction to the, you know, to the basically it's called weak localization in this case. And then, just like in condensed matter, I don't know how many of you are actually from condensed matter, but there is a transition from classical metal to a strong Anderson insulator and goes through an intermediate phase, which is regime called weak localization. Here it's actually the same thing, except it's in dynamics. And well, basically this thing here at their Enfield time is the same effect, but for a more complicated object. That you have essentially classical physics up to this point, and then quantum mechanics, self-intersections start developing. I'm not going to explain this. Well, maybe I should. So I mean, in the usual case, there is basically classical, you know, whatever you calculate, it's a sum of some amplitude squared. And so there is a first term, which is classical diffusion, and then there is some quantum interference term. What I'm saying here is that the interesting quantum interference terms in this case take time to develop, and that leads to this, you know, transition to suppression of classical chaos at the Ehrenfest time. And I should mention that this beautiful effect, Alainer-Larkin effect, sudden onset of quantum mechanics, has never been directly observed, but people are working on this now. So I actually advertised it to my colleagues, and they're trying to, you know, figure it out. Anyway, so I think this this basically completes the single particle part, and I think I have about 10 minutes. Do I have 10 minutes to talk about quantum anyway? Any questions so far? Okay. So yeah, and so these were very nice models, but they were, you may say, simple models, right? They are single particle models from the outset. So in many cases, actually, to be honest, in many cases, when we do solve many body models, they're still eventually mapped onto single particle models by some mean fields. So this is not a useless exercise necessarily. But I would say that you know, these many body models are more interesting. And so what maybe last few things I'm going to mention briefly is something which can be called many body chaos. Actually, I have to admit, I don't know what that means, even though we run these conferences and, you know, talk about it. But I have no idea what that means. I haven't really heard a definition. Kind of, I know it when I see it, I guess. So, but
strongly correlated person, you would say, there's really resistivity. I said, it's a Q brain.
Right. So what I'm going to talk about is some simple model. Well, actually not a simple model, classic model, standard model of what may be called many particle chaotic system. I'm not sure if it's many body chaos per se, but which is basically a metal. So it's a disordered system with interactions. So, and I should say that most of the interesting work was done by this, my new postdoc, Yunxiang Liao, who I think is just a genius, basically. So she's really great. I mean, I really enjoy working with her. And also with Sergei Sizhanov, who is now a professor somewhere in Santa Cruz. Anyway, so I'm not going to bore you too much with the technicalities, but I should mention that if you study many body interacting system, you can believe me that to calculate this object is not a trivial exercise. So one, approach, though, that can be used is so-called Keldysh formalism, which, for the usual Keldysh formalism for non-equilibrium systems, usually you go forward and backward in time, e to the power I plus HT, e to the power minus IHT. So here we have out-of-time order correlator. We have two paths like that we have to care about. And this can be called two different worlds in some sense. These are like two different trajectories that you want to compare, or two different worlds where similar physics occurs. That's what Alainer and company called it. And yeah, there are two types of correlators you may want to consider, and there are some interesting things about regularization of this correlator. So what we used, which I'm not going to again tell you too much about, is so-called Keldysh nonlinear singular model. Essentially, it's a way to describe a disordered system in terms of its actual low energy degrees of freedom. So if you have a disordered system, well, you write it in terms of electrons and bouncing off of impurities. These are natural variables to formulate your Hamiltonian is in, but it's not a very useful one. So the actual modes that propagate are diffusion modes, basically Green's function of diffusion equations. They're called diffusons and Couperons, and you can write a theory in terms of those modes. It's like maybe dual description. There is a very well-developed technique. It's not something we invented, but what we did invent is that we married this Keldysh technique and this sigma model, and we used it to calculate.
Is this in two dimensions?
Especially? It's any dimension. No, it doesn't matter at all. I mean, we mostly focus on two dimensions, but no, it has nothing to do with dimensionality. So and what we're looking at is the following. So, if you have, basically, what is the model? The model is, you have a bunch of randomly placed impurities. You have many body electron system, interacting system. So electrons bounce off of the impurities and interact. So there may be two sources of chaos. One is simply that you have electrons bouncing off of impurities and, their trajectories diverge eventually. That's, I would say, that's a single particle chaos, which happens in a many body system. Then there is a different type of chaos, which happens because the particles actually interact. That's what really people call many-body chaos. This is a hydrodynamics kind of thing. And this model sort of has both. Now, what we're looking at technically is that there is a kind of low-energy mode, which is basically the Green's function of the diffusion equation, which is a massless mode, gapless mode. It's just Fourier transform of the diffusion equation. And what we're doing, we're trying to use this technique to find if there is a mass to this mode. Now. So basically, if you Fourier transform it, so you can get, it's been known for a while. So if you do it within the world, within each of these contours, you see what's called dephasing. This is basically a mechanism for suppression of quantum interference effects, like inelastic processes in normal description of metals. But in this chaos approach, there is also kind of interworld contribution of the opposite sides sign, which leads to growth of this diffuson mode, and that's what we want to find. That's this thing is this Lyapunov exponent we're after. And I'm just going to say that, okay, we calculated two types of the correlators. So one was considered by Maldacena, they did a different model, but this type of symmetrized correlator, is what was used in this theorem that people actually proved. So, and the other one is, I would say, a natural correlator, when you just, take the trace of the density matrix with whatever you want to calculate. And this one was already considered by Sajdev, Patel, Swingle, and Chaudhry. So, to make a long story short, so what we found is that in the case of the regularized correlature, we get a correlature, we get an exponential in two dimensions anyways, that is within the bound. So this is this presumably fundamental bound that you know was postulated. But the unregularized correlator has totally different Lyapunov exponent. It violates the bound. Well, so it's kind of actually disconcerting, frankly, because there is, I would say that it's, this object is not something I would be comfortable asking my experimental colleagues to go ahead and measure. So, because, you know, this one is tough enough, but I mean, the splitting of the density matrices is really, you know, tough. But however, so it's not, as I will mention, so actually, physically speaking, so we realized that this this regularized exponent, in some sense, has some magic constellations, which get rid of single particle chaos and just extract this interaction part. Something very interesting. And in some sense, it's similar to dephasing. And this one mixes up all types of chaos. So for instance, if you just take, I don't know, a simple chaotic system, let's say billiard, you know, pour some particles into this chaotic system and let them evolve, well, they can, it will be a many-body system, but it will exhibit single-particle chaos. But on top of that, there will be many-body chaos due to interactions. And so in some sense, this object mixes up the two notions, while this one extracts just one. And it's kind of interesting. So I think I'm running out of time, so I'm going to just skip maybe the Larkinov-Chinnikov model that was actually considered by them in 68, and we reconsidered it, and just focus on maybe one thing, that in certain models, you can get a transition from the, like in this Larkinov-Chinnikov model, which is again interacting disordered system. So you can get a transition in this out of time order correlator from exponential growth to lag thereof. And one possibility, and you may ask a question, which in fact I've been asking. So why are we calculating this object? Why is it interesting? So again, if we assume that there is a consistency between different definitions of chaos, really. If the existence of exponential growth implies Wigner-Dyson distribution and vice versa, so then it's useful. So for example, in this model, this correlator can be calculated analytically, and while Wigner-Dyson statistics cannot really be calculated very straightforwardly. So, and maybe what happens in this case, so there is a transition, for example, from let's say chaos to lack of chaos, and this will manifest itself in level statistics transitions from Wigner-Dyson to Poisson. So if this is true, this is very measurable, this is reasonable, and this is interesting. So this is something we're working on now, trying to figure out if that's actually the case. So I had one slide on trying to explain why the bound is violated. I don't know if it's of any interest to you. Maybe I should just go to the conclusions. Let me just do the letter. So, and this basically just, I'm going to just recite what I've been trying to tell you. So, we've studied this out of time order correlator as an alternative way to define and describe quantum chaos. And kind of my view, at least, is that search for an exponential growth of this out of time correlator in a quotic system is equivalent to the search of most classical variables. So in some cases, such as the classical states in billiard, they are trivial to find. In some other case, well, not necessarily so. So it may be some gravity description on this dual side that is classical. That's where you want to go to see this chaos. So in general, we find that this exponential growth rate of this correlator is different, actually, from the classical Lyapunov. One has to be a bit careful here. But it's only true in systems with mixed phase space. There are quite a few of those, but you know, one has to be careful. And also, one has to be a little careful in defining and separating single particle chaos from many body chaos, which means that separating effects which would have happened even if you didn't have many particles, if they were not interacting, from those that come entirely from interactions, for instance. Just bouncing off of each other gives you this exponential growth. What we also find is that regularized correlator seems, which was introduced by Stanford and others, actually seems to measure the latter, many body chaos, while the unregularized one, which is more natural to write down, more natural to measure directly, mixes up the two notions. So, and something I didn't have time to talk about too much, but if you have interest, I'll explain. So this bound, Maldacena-Schechter Stanford bound on quantum chaos can be violated in fermionic systems. So everything was right in their paper. There was no mistake or anything, but there are some conditions. So their bound is not a sacred, well, it's not a religious statement. It's a theorem which has conditions. And one of the conditions is actually violated in some, in some systems that, for instance, condensed matter people may care about, such as just metals. And that's something to be kept in mind. And what we're actually working on now, as I mentioned, not working, thinking about, is that, what, it seems like a very appealing quantity, intuitively very nice, but we still need to kind of get a handle on it to see what it actually measures, how to get really useful information from it, something maybe measurable, something deep. So anyway, so thank you for your attention. I'll maybe just mention people who will be doing all the work. So it's actually Efim Rosenbaum, Sergei Sizranov, mostly Yung Shang, who is very good. And we're also collaborating with Leo Bunimovich, who is Bunimovich Billiards. So it's writing StatMech papers with Boltzmann or something. So thank you very much.
Can you describe why it's done?
Yeah, so I had a slide on this. So the simplest way to understand it is the following. So let's consider some chaotic system. So it could be, it might be Liard. It could be what I refer to as a metal, which is basically just a bunch of randomly positioned impurities and, particle bouncing off of each other. And each of these cases can be actually understood or mapped in a way on a simple model of a motion on a curved negative curvature manifold. So let's say if you have particles on a hyperboloid and they follow geodesics, well, sure enough, the geodesics are going to diverge, and how they diverge is, well, it's actually very simple. It's just, velocity. Well, the faster the particles go, the faster they diverge. It's obvious. And then divided by the radius of the curvature radius and where they are. Well, that's simple. Now, if you put bosons, if you just now say, okay, this is single particle picture, and then you put a lot of bosons into the system, just take a bucket of bosons, throw them into this hyperboloid. Well, these bosons are going to condense at low temperature. So energy is actually going to be, scale with temperature, and so this Lyapunov exponent will be going to zero at zero temperature, which is fine, and so the bound is consistent. You can actually calculate, figure out the bound. There is a paper by Jorge Kurchan, by comparing the Lyapunov length and de Broglie wavelength. But what I'm saying is that if you put fermions in there, well, they just don't condense. They just form a Fermi surface, and there is a finite energy, and that's it. So, if your particles don't go, don't condense at zero temperature, well, it's just a finite number, which was, in fact, in the Larkin-Ovchinnikov paper in 68. So I'm kind of surprised people are surprised, because it was there, actually.
So the two assumptions usually go into the chaos bound are like Larkin factorization and the fact that two-point functions decay quicker.
Right, so actually I kind of expected this. So I discussed it with, people usually don't trust what I say, but I got this email from Maldacena. So and this is like, message from God. Let me just explain. So there is an assumption that if you actually read their paper, so there is an assumption there. Okay. So and the assumption is that there is certain inequality. There is this out of time ordered correlator, and there is this this out of time ordered and this is normally ordered correlator. Well, they behave in a certain way, and they assume that this is larger than this. If this assumption doesn't hold, their theorem may or may not work. It's no longer a theory. It's one of the assumptions. Well, you can show, he actually showed, that in our case, it is not true. So in the case of fermionic systems, so this, this is just an email he sent us, so because he was visiting and he was kind of, I mentioned that we are getting this result and he explained why it is so. So the theorem is fine, except you have to be careful in applying it. So normally, actually, this assumption is reasonable because you would say that the source of exponential growth really comes from the out-of-time ordered part. So this not out-of-time ordered part shouldn't give you anything exponentially growing. So this assumption is very reasonable. But the point is that when you have single particle chaos to begin with, so it doesn't have to hold anymore. So and that's exactly what, for example, happens, just models I sort of care about, like metals, which are chaotic models, they interact, they're many-body chaotic. So there it doesn't hold necessarily. So if you study field theory, such as what Stanford does, you know, this 5^4 or whatever, so that's like it does hold. And this inequality is not violated, but one should be careful with applying it.
The inequality is also not true in random matrices.
Say again?
The inequality is also not true in random matrices.
I have no idea. Maybe.
No, I'm saying it isn't. But I think it's for a more trivial reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you mentioned about analog of decomposition.
Right, right.
Higgs, the Zeta principle. Okay, that's
right. Right, yeah.
And what is analog of universal variance? That's in the normal Anderson localization.
Yes.
Depends on universal.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a bit involved, so I mean, there are a bunch of papers on that, but essentially you have to think about motion. I don't have slides on that, but you essentially have to think about motion in this on this angular momentum lattice. So it's like, for example, suppose you just study, okay, let's say we study one-dimensional lattice model with some disorder. You can still think about trajectories, right, so sort of in one dimension. So you have to go back and forth, sort of.
So
you just don't do it in real space. You do it in angular momentum space, just in different bases. And so you can reformulate everything in this kind of angular momentum space, and things just carry over, more or less. So it's been done by Lark. Yeah.
Yes, out of curiosity, have you looked at magnetic pendulum study exponent?
Magnetic pendulum. No, we have not. I mean, there are many, many models in principle to study this whole, you know, universe of the dynamical system. So we looked at some other models, but not the one you're. So why are you interested in this one?
Oh, yes. Because you can also there have interactions. So that answers my next question.
Okay.
So when you have a single particle system which is chaotic, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And you put many of those particles to interact, is the main particle system also going to be chaotic?
You mean the dynamical localization? Yeah, actually, I mean, I wish I put my slides in there. So we have a few papers on that. So there is no universal answer, yes or no. The interesting thing, it may be chaotic. So I don't know if you're familiar with many-body localization.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, so many-body localization is that one way to think about it is that, you know, you have some random potential in real space, you know, it's single particle localized, and then you put many particles in there, let them interact a little bit, it's still localized. Okay. So here what we can imagine, let's say we have these rotors, independent rotors, don't talk to each other, and each of them is being kicked. So of course, each of them is going to be dynamically localized. Now the question is, if you turn on weak interaction, what's going to happen? So for this particular model, I actually don't know. But because it's, you know, you're talking about interacting time-dependent many-body system, it's not easy to solve. But what we can prove is that such models that are localized do exist. So that has been proven. So we have papers with Gil Raphael on that stuff. So, and they do exist. So, but usually you may worry about resonances. So in some sense, this delocalization or kind of breakdown of chaos happens because you hit a resonance. And when you have many particles, there are just many more resonances, and then if they become dense, then you may get delocalized. But in some models, you can prove that, you know, such things do exist. So there is a phenomenon of many-body dynamical localization. It's kind of interesting, I think. Yeah.
So one of the formulae you had for Ehrenberg-Stein, where H bar was explicitly in, had a very non-analytic dependence on H bar. Is this always true that you cannot get in semi-classical approximation? So is it clear why the semi-classical description would break down if I go to H bar?
So I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to. I think normally. Oh, you're talking about Ehrenfest time.
Yeah.
Oh, Ehrenfest, not Lyapunov exponent. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So Ehrenfest time, basically tells you how quickly quantum effects kick in. Of course, the larger the H-bar, the quicker.
It's important that it's not non-analytic in H-bar, right? right? So it
no, it's just a thing. It's just the inverting the exponential. It's just comparing something.
Ideally, if it was a semi-classical approximation, one would say maybe it's 1/h², right? But here it's much larger. It's 1/log.
It's always like that, actually. Yeah, it's basically comparing different length scales. You know, one grows exponentially, then you invert the exponential. That's how it usually works. So.
Well, I guess I'm asking if you can get this in starting from semi-classicals.
Well, I mean, you need quantum mechanics to figure out what it does, right?
So the correction is not enough, right? So,
actually, you can get it from first correction. Yeah. I think you can get it from first correction.
You can?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should talk. I don't know. If we're talking later, I'll explain it. Yeah.
Any more questions? Can I ask just a very dumb question?
Sure.
Why is it called out of time order curve?
Oh, yeah. So, right. So, so let's say, you know, if you take this, this object, right? And just expand it, you know, you commutate it and actually square it that way. So you will have, in particular, you will have terms like this. Well, you will also have terms like this. So this type of a correlator is the usual thing you would expect in any. I don't know, if you calculate correlation functions, you know, that's the kind of thing. You get two operators, one at time zero, another at time t. You can do it using usual, I don't know, Kubo formula, whatever. So this one, when you go forward in time, backward in time, forward in time, you know, that's why it's called out of time order. So it's not really something you can get using regular methods of filter. And also, I mean, the kind of motivation is that, you know, if you have, let's say, thermal state, you put some perturbation in there and evolve it in time. So eventually you know, if the perturbation is small enough, you will get to the thermal state. And I think what's interesting, what people study is that, you know, this is zero of time, this is you know, t. Then if you put here another perturbation, let's say this is w and this is v, evolve it backward in time, you will still get into a thermal state if you're in a galvanic system. But they kind of would secretly know about your perturbations, and this what this object measures in some sense is this sensitivity of one to the other. So you have to kind of propagate system back and forth, back and forth. That's why it's called.
Great, that's nice picture again.